Hello, everybody, and welcome to the next episode of Red Wolf Talk. My name is Kim Wheeler, and I am your host, and I am really excited about our guest today. I have been wanting to get her on the podcast for a little while, and it seems like schedules, conflicts, all that kind of good stuff came up. So, but before I introduce you to our guest today, I want to take a minute to thank everybody for all of your support in 2023. Without you guys, the Red Wolf Coalition would not be around. And I mean that sincerely. We could not do what we do without your support. We don't get any state or federal funding. It all comes from amazing supporters like you. So thank you very, very much. We look forward to a lot of good things in 2024, and we hope that everybody will stay positive and that you feel positive about Red Wolf conservation. There are no conservation programs, the restoration of any animal, that are easy, that go seamless. And I just want you to always remember that. No, behind the scenes, not really behind the scenes, but the service is always working. This group of individuals are rock stars. I've always said that. I've always believed that. And I just don't want you to forget it. They are using everything, every tool in their toolbox to give these animals a chance at recovery. And for those animals that come from the SAFE program that are the captive animals, please know that the service is going to be working really hard to make that transition as easy as possible. But again, no, these are wild animals at the end of the day, and there's the service can do everything that they know possible. But at the end of the day, it will be up to the animals to decide whether they stay together or what happens. Again, free will, and they certainly have that. When I talk about being positive, many people know that for the last couple of years, there have been releases that are scheduled, and there are releases for 2024. The service anticipates attempting to create five pairs of red wolves. Now, these pairing scenarios, there's a lot of things that are very dependent on them. First of all, we have wild animals, we have captive animals. The captive animals come to North Carolina, spend some time in an acclimation pen. The wild animals have to be caught. And so might sound simple, but it is not always easy to do. So there are excellent plans in place. There's also plans for pup fostering. Again, have to wait and see what happens. So I just ask all of you again to remain positive. Understand that there are some great plans in place, but you know about plans. Sometimes they don't always go as expected. So anyway, thank you very much again. And I look forward to doing more podcasts in 2024. I have my wish list of people that I've reached out to, have heard from a couple, some have been able to, some have not, that I really want to get on the podcast to talk to you. Some of them are talking forward thinking, some of them a little bit of both. Some have been some of the original members that were around when these wolves were first restored on the landscape here in North Carolina. So stay tuned, stay positive. So today, I want to introduce you to somebody that I've gotten to know over the last couple of years. She has so much enthusiasm and so much love for red wolves. I'm just thrilled that she's able to be on the program with me today. So if anybody has been to the Red Wolf Education Center here in Columbia, North Carolina, you have had the distinct pleasure to meet Katarina Ramos. I call her Kat. I asked to make sure that that was okay. And you've had the opportunity to see the wolves here and also to take one of the programs. But I want to tell you a little bit about Kat before we get chatting away. Kat started her career volunteering her time in the wildlife rehabilitation field in Pennsylvania. She has her Bachelor's of Science in Zoology from Delaware Valley University. Gosh, today, and a Master's of Science in Integrative Biology from Oklahoma State University. In between her bachelor's and her master's, Kat interned for the Red Wolf Recovery Program in 2018. So that wasn't that long ago. Once completing her master's, she returned to the world of the Red Wolf, and she is the Red Wolf Education and Outreach Coordinator for North Carolina Wildlife Federation. She has been in that position since November 2020. Katarina also sits on the Safe Education Committee for Red Wolves, and she continues her work by running the Red Wolf Center in Columbia, North Carolina. So, Kat, welcome to Red Wolf Talk.
Oh my gosh, I'm very excited to be here. Thank you so much for
Oh,
having me.
you're welcome. You are welcome. I've been excited to have you on for a couple reasons. Number one, you're new-ish. I mean, you were doing in 2018, you were part of the recovery program as an intern. And so you got firsthand knowledge of what goes on the ground. And now in your position, it's a little bit of both. You have that opportunity to bring all that knowledge you learned as an intern, but also now have the opportunity to develop programs, talk to people, kind of find out what locals think, what visitors think. And so I'm curious, in your experience with wildlife education and outreach, I mean, what do you think those experiences have been like when you look at the two and kind of where you are today?
So it's been really interesting. So when I did wildlife rehabilitation, a lot of the communication and the outreach that we did was talking about how to coexist with wildlife in our backyards. So where I lived in Pennsylvania, we were in the middle of the woods along the Appalachian Trail, however you like to pronounce that. I get yelled at for both ways.
That's okay.
And so a lot of it was trying to mitigate that human-wildlife conflict of how do you live with them in your backyard? Oh, there's raccoons in my attic. How do I get rid of them? And then, of course, the problem of people asking if they could have one as a pet. And over time, that's definitely shaped my way of being able to communicate with people as some of the topics got more and more controversial. So I was starting to work with the coyotes over in Pennsylvania at the Wildlife Rehabilitation Center. I slowly moved my way into wolves, obviously being an intern for the Red Wolf Recovery Program and then coming back. And I found that I've really been able to hone in those experiences into what I currently do today, and being able to start from maybe not so much as an intense education and outreach perspective has definitely been great, because I feel like I got a lot of that foundational skill. And so with that foundational skill, I've been able to expand on it and use those past experiences of lighter conversations into some of these heavier topics.
Yeah, talking about wolves, you know, it's funny. I've been doing this for a little bit of time now, and I definitely have changed. When I stop and think about, you know, this is my 19th year. When I think about the first 2 years and how I approached, I don't think necessarily how I approach people, but how I approach questions or comments certainly has changed and evolved. And, you know, and living wildlife and living with humans is such a conundrum. I don't know if you feel this way, Kat. It doesn't matter if it's a wolf or a turtle or a snake or a bug or a plant. We just get all wound around the axles. It's not a very easy thing to do. Or at least that's sort of my thought on it. What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, absolutely. So, I mean, being able to do public outreach and education, and then also going to grad school and having to hold more of that academic education space, really interesting to watch how people's perceived idea of wildlife unfolds in front of them. So I distinctly remember giving a snake program back, this was back in the day. I can say that because it's been more than a decade. So, you know.
Absolutely.
But like, I remember holding up a hognose snake, which if you are a snake fan, some people are not, totally okay. Hognose snakes tend to be a very cute looking species with their little upturned nose that they use to dig around. And so they're typically more accepted by people. However, I've had kids just scream. Never seen a snake before, but they know that their parents told them that snakes are scary. And so, no matter what, whether it's your own personal experience or something that you're taught from a young age or something that you hear in pop culture, it has added so much more difficulty to education and outreach for wildlife because there's conceptions about wildlife and wild things all over the place, whether good or bad. And so it's a time.
It is, and sometimes when I'm having conversations with somebody about red wolves, 9 times out of 10, somewhere in that conversation, they're going to say to me, "I don't have anything against the wolves. It's the government."
Oh,
And leave them
yes.
alone. That's always my, then leave them alone. What are you getting so wound up about? And do you know enough to be upset about wolves on the landscape? I mean, I think that's why I've said it 100 times. Education, Red Wolf education, is job security. I don't know if you feel that way.
Yes.
I mean, it's never going to stop. There are always opportunities to talk to people. I always get a little whatever upset when somebody comes in and they're like, "I can't believe they live in North Carolina and don't know about red wolves." Well, there's a lot of things about North Carolina I don't know about because I'm not involved or I don't have an interest. And I think that's the case with red wolves. That's why I always say there will always be job security when it comes to red wolf conservation. Absolutely, without a doubt. And people hear what they want to hear, they believe what they want to believe.
Oh,
I
I
definitely believe that.
100% agree. It's a very interesting way to navigate through education and outreach, but again, you're correct. It is absolutely job security.
So how do you think your experiences have shaped the way you approach Red Wolf? So you've been doing this job since November of 2020, so just a little over 2 years. How do you, when you first went into this job, we all have ideals and we have this great list and we're going to do this and we're going to conquer the world. And then you get in the job and you realize sometimes that things are different, or your opinions or the way you go at things change. How do you think things, experiences, and time has changed what you're doing?
So when I'm trying to figure out how to explain this. So when I was an intern in 2018, I was still doing education programs. That was back, I think it was the last year that they had the howling programs over on Alligator River. And I always had a positive experience with that. And I never really had people coming up to me and saying, "Oh, well, I don't understand why we're trying to save the red wolf," because people coming to those programs were just excited. They wanted to hear wolves howl, were interested in red wolves. And so coming into this position in 2020, I genuinely was excited because I thought, yeah, I'm going to talk to so many people that are also interested in red wolves. I probably won't come across a lot of people because in my brain, I was like, why would you not want to like red wolves? I mean, they can so much to the environment, so much to the economy, the whole nine yards. And thankfully, I decided to take a step back from that excitement so that I could really assess what was going on because I wasn't blind. All of the controversy of the red wolves, I had been at the 2018 public hearing. I had a little bit of an idea of how emotional and controversial the species was. However, taking that step back allowed me to really view what the challenges were going to be in communicating with the public. Because previous to this, I could spit out all the facts in the world, and people are like, "Oh my gosh, yes, tell me more." And I'm like, "Absolutely. What small, weird, menial detail would you like to know?"
I know. I mean, I think I used to find if it was a small, like one-on-one, I don't know if you feel this way, not in a large group, but sort of one-on-one, So we obviously were part of the education center there at the beginning. If I could find out what people were interested, like were they interested in the biology? Was it economics? Was it the political aspect? Then I like that because then I could kind of just like you, I could spew a whole ocean of facts at you. But if I have the opportunity to reach an interest of that individual I'm talking to, then I like that even better.
Yeah, I mean, so I love those kinds of conversations, and I love having them as more as like a conversation than me speaking for 40 minutes straight.
Exactly.
My general program. And so when I started experiencing people that had more of a negative perception, it kind of jarred me because everything I had learned previously was just spit out random facts, they're gonna love it. And so I had to completely change how I viewed education and outreach in conjunction with this kind of controversy, because no matter what, you had emotions, you had livelihoods that feel threatened, and it's a very real human dimension involved with Red Wolf recovery, which is going to be apparent for any larger predator, but and wildlife in general, but something that I genuinely wasn't not ready for, but definitely took me a step back.
Oh, exactly. So for me, when I first started, again, I have all this information. I'm excited, and then you go and talk to somebody, and they don't see the value in the program. And in your head, you're like, "What do you mean you don't see the value?" And blah 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 blah. And this is why. And it's not that I did not value the fact that they had a different opinion. I don't think I appreciated it as much as I do today. And again, like you, it doesn't take a long time to get that appreciation. If it does, then maybe whoever it is shouldn't be in a conservation field, because we all have to understand that we all have very different opinions. I don't like Brussels sprouts. Kat, you might make the most wonderful Brussels sprouts in the world, but I'm not eating them. I mean, it's just not happening. And you mentioned snakes. I don't love snakes for whatever reason. There's a fear, I think. And I would be one of those. No, I wouldn't even be screaming in the class. I had already been out of the classroom, so I wouldn't have been one of the ones that was screaming. But it is. It's that taking that moment to breathe and say, okay, this person doesn't see a value. We're just going to have a conversation, and they may stop it. And if they stop it, they stop it. If I stop it, I stop it. I mean, sometimes on social media, somebody will say, "Well, why didn't you keep on with the conversation?" I'm like, "Because I'm only going to hit my head against the wall so many times." And I understand at some point people aren't going to listen, you know, they're done. And I guess I'm the same way. I guess everybody's that way. But you were talking about the howlings. I think of all the things I've done, we did the howlings for 5 years. I think I probably have enjoyed those the most for all the
Oh yeah.
reasons you said.
They were so unique, and not continuing them now has definitely has its reasons, and I'm more than happy to have those reasons in light of the forward momentum with the program. But yeah, those howling programs were great.
And not just because of the wolves, but there were so many people, like you take them back and it's dark. And there's a lot of people in urban settings. I always had, you know, if the wolves didn't howl, oh well, I still had people look up in the sky. And like, we have these wildlife refuges. There are places for animals, but there's also places for people that you can come and re-energize yourself. And I used to love, I didn't like it when they didn't howl, but if they didn't, they didn't. There was nothing I could do about it. But again, it was an opportunity, you know, to hopefully bring value to the program and value to the refuge system.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, just the fact that we're one of the last places on the East Coast that still has dark skies
I
is
know.
more than amazing.
And it gets pretty dark in some places.
It does. Oh my gosh. Oh.
I participated. Gosh, it's been 5 years. A dark sky study for Dr. Stan Riggs out of ECU, and he had a list of places to go in the 5 county recovery area. And there were some places, you know, you hear things in the dark. And I had more than a couple times where I went scurrying into the car because I was just sure there was something out there watching me standing there in the dark. But it is, you're right. It's pretty amazing. So when you think about people's opinions about the Red Wolf, and you know, you talked a little bit about that emotion, and you're looking at compassion versus reaction. So when you're doing an outreach program, again, I always feel like sometimes there can be too much emotion, where if an individual is so emotional and something's happened that might be negative, trying to get them to understand this is what happens. It's like I talked about in the beginning of this program, the service has a plan for releases, and at the end of the day, these are wild animals, and they may not stay together, or something may happen. But that doesn't mean we throw the baby out with the bathwater. So, when you look at from an outreach perspective, that compassion versus reaction, how do you consider that when you're doing outreach?
So, I mean, I definitely early on in my career, and definitely when I was doing wildlife rehabilitation, I would occasionally get people that would just have a very strong negative feeling about animals, and I would definitely be more reactive than compassionate because I just simply could not wrap my head at how someone could believe this. And as I've grown in this outreach position with Red Wolves, more specifically, because it's definitely been honed in through Red Wolf Outreach, is I've started approaching people with, well, where have you heard information like this, or how do you feel about this information? And so I may have someone coming up to me and going, I really don't like Red Wolves, which has happened to me at parties. And I'm like, all right.
Haven't we all?
Yeah, right. It's just it comes with the territory. But I don't really like Red Wolves. I'm like, okay, well, why? And then it's always, well, I think they're dangerous, or they're not real, or any of the typical negative reactions towards Red Wolves. And then that goes into another layer of, okay, well, where did you hear this information? Have you experienced it? And so if they have experienced anything negative, then it opens up that conversation of like, oh no, that is pretty hard. And instead of immediately shutting down at one aspect of, well, I don't really agree with you on Red Wolves, and it's like, okay, that's the end of our conversation. It leads to that further conversation. And I may not end with us being on the same sides of the coin, but I never aim for that truly. I aim to give answers to questions that they may have, and to have that communication line open. Because in the future, they may have questions about something. And instead of feeling like, oh, well, that cat, she's so closed off to anything, I can't approach her, it goes to, hey, you know what? She was pretty, I think she would have an answer to this if I asked her, and she won't judge me for this question. So I found that as long as I stopped letting myself react, because everything involving Red Wolves is so personal. I mean, as educators, Kim, I'm sure you feel the same way, but it really is so ingrained in you as a person. You fully like want to fight for this species.
Oh,
And it's
absolutely.
fascinating to see it grow, and so much of your self-worth is tied with it. And so having someone come up to you and say something so negative about it almost feels very personal. And so I found when I'm able to remember this isn't a personal attack on me, but rather them airing their concerns, their frustrations, it changes the perspective of the conversation to one that can take steps forward instead of steps backwards.
Oh,
And so that's why I
I
consider it.
agree. Yeah, it's I completely agree. I mean, I think about conversations of people that have come in the office that have maybe been negative, and I think about how they came in. And if you deal with the public for any length of time, you can kind of read body language. And again, I've been doing this for a little while, and I almost know, like, okay, here we go. this person's coming in to unload. And I think, okay, well, just like you said, okay, I'm here. I'm okay. Go ahead. I'm going to listen. And when you're finished, then I want that same respect, to do it respectfully, to answer questions, clear up any concerns, but doesn't mean we're going to walk out friends. We're going to be singing Kumbaya. It just means we both had an opportunity to share information, and maybe somewhere a week from now, they may think about something that I said, or they've heard something else that reinforces that, and they go, okay, and maybe something will be changed. I've always said, I don't know if you feel this way, Kat, it's not my place to make you like red wolves. It's my place to teach you about wolves
Yes.
and to
Oh.
show you How do they live? Like, so let me ask you this. So I'll give you my answer because I don't want to put you on the spot. I try never to do that with any guests. I had somebody ask me once if they took away all the children's books that had anything to do with the big bad wolf that did not show a wolf in a positive light, did I think it would make a difference in children, subsequent teenagers, young adults, and adults? And I've always struggled with that because I don't remember as a child ever reading those books. Probably somebody did. I just don't remember. I don't remember that it shaped me. I think for me, that perception of those children's books is more what society says, and it's a blame. Well, this is why we feel this way about wolves more than I actually think a child's book read to a child somehow shaped that notion that wolves were bad. So what do you think? If I were to ask you, do you think if all the children's books were taken away, I'm talking about, little kids that are read to, do you think that would change how kids and subsequent adults feel about wolves and just wolves in general, not just red wolves?
So my follow-up question would honestly be, is it that they never existed in the first place, or that just suddenly in 2024 those books are no longer allowed?
Oh, just that they never existed. If they never were around, do you think that would change how people felt about wolves?
Truthfully, no. And it's because we have a, like you said, the societal ideation of a predator or of wolves in general is always going to be this negative, confrontational, aggressive animal. And then and it's both in written and verbalized. I mean, we don't always have written stories. It's sometimes you have generational stories that are just passed down by word of mouth. And it is normal to feel some sort of a fear towards wildlife if you don't know what to expect from them. I'll be honest with you, Kim, I'm terrified of horses,
There you go.
which is hilarious because I've worked with coyotes, black bear, raccoons, red wolves, and I'm scared of horses. And it's strictly because I have no idea what to expect from them.
I can understand that.
So
Mine are
I
mice.
agree.
I hate mice. A mouse will send me running. And you know as well as I do, I'm the caretaker of the wolves at the center there. And sometimes they get rats as treats. And the first time I had to do that, I looked at that bag of frozen rats and went, okay, so how am I going to do this? How am I going to overcome this fear? And I did. I still don't love it, but if a mouse ran across this floor in this office, I'd be on my desk so fast. But yet it doesn't bother me to, take care of wolves or
Yeah.
do my volunteer work at the international. I mean, it's funny. Everybody has something.
Oh,
But
absolutely.
again, I think it's, what a, I have my, I think mice, oh, the house must be dirty, not realizing I live in the country and there's gonna be mice. You
Oh
know what
my
I mean?
gosh.
There's,
Yeah.
it's again, and I think it just goes back to some preconceived notions or something. I don't know. I just, somebody somewhere probably, I saw it somewhere that if your house is dirty, you're going to get mice. Not, hey, you live in the country surrounded by farm fields. What do you think is going to come visit you kind of idea?
Yeah, exactly. So I completely agree with you. It would still be a concept in our society for sure.
I mean, it's just watching TV programs. I was watching a program the other night and there's a wolf in it. And so far, it hasn't been negative, but I've seen this program before, so I know how it ends and it doesn't end well. And I'm like, why does it have to not end well? Like, it's, I don't know if you feel this way. I don't consider myself jaded. Sometimes on social media, when I see how people talk about wolves and they are romanticizing them, and I'm reading it going, well, that's just a wolf being a wolf. They are good family members. They do have cool ways to communicate. They look after each other. They have to eat. They have to defend territories, And when that romanticism sometimes happens, it's sometimes a struggle for me to kind of move forward. And I'm sure you've had people that have come and talked to you and said things, and you just kind of stand there. I think with when I go back to the Howlings and think about them, there were some crazy things said to me early on, and I remember just standing there thinking, I don't know what to say. Like I had this one man say, he looked into the eyes of a wolf, and the wolf looked back, and it took his soul, and I didn't know what to say. What do you say? Like, are you soulless? I mean, I didn't know what to say.
Are
Are
you
you
so
It was funny. And after a while, you hear
Oh.
that a couple times, and then you think of a response, and then that response gets better over the years. So.
Yeah, there's always a first time for something, and I will always have the opinion that I will never have the answer to everything because
No.
everyone's perception of life is always unique, and someone's going to catch me off guard no matter what.
Yeah. So do you find people that come to the center, are a good majority of them already know about red wolves, or do you feel like they have seen something somewhere and they're in the area and are interested in wanting to learn more?
Honestly, I've had a mixed bag. So I've
Have you?
had locals that knew of the Red Wolf Center, and since the mural got put on the Red Wolf Center, more people have visualized it and come in and being like, "Oh, I've lived here my entire life. I never knew this was here. Tell me about Red Wolves." And I'm like, "Cool." I've had people that were terrified of Red Wolves from the local area and came in. They're like, "I have questions. I'm scared to see your exhibit wolves." And I'm like, "That's fine." So really great. And then I have people that the only thing that they know about Red Wolf is that they saw the electronic message boards on 64 and they typed in Red Wolf and it popped up as the Red Wolf Center on Google.
Hey, there you go. If they work, they work.
Yeah, right? Absolutely. And so I've had people that have had a good amount of information and were able to get into a deeper conversation. And I've had people that know absolutely nothing. And they're like, "Tell me what I need to know." Cool, do you have 4 hours?
Are you amazed sometimes when people see them, their reaction? Like, do they say, oh, I thought they'd be bigger? Because I think everybody has in their mind a gray wolf. Gray wolves you see on TV are always big. And gray wolves are bigger, absolutely. They're 40 pounds, they can be 40 pounds bigger than a red wolf.
I really I've had such a wide variety of reactions. I've had people that were just interested in seeing. They're like, "Oh, that's nice." And then I've had people that just downright cried seeing, not in like a negative way, but in like, "Oh my gosh, this animal's so gorgeous. Like how, like just so much appreciation." And yes, people that think they're small, but other people that are like, "Wow, they're way bigger than what I thought they were." And of course, that always comes with the conversation of, "I thought they were like just about the same size as coyotes." And then they see them, they're like, "That is not the size of a coyote."
When we were part of building that facility there, I really wanted to have a pen with a coyote in it, because I thought, how great, just side, not necessarily side by side, but to be able to take people from one pen to the other to really see the difference. But couldn't get any permits for that. And that's fine. You have some, for those people that haven't been to the Red Wolf Center, there are some great mounts. You can see a red wolf and you can see a coyote, and a lot of great information there. But I think I get a lot of pictures. I'm not sure if you do. I feel like, I go through phases where it's like every day somebody's sending me a video. And they might live in Wisconsin, they might live in Michigan, they might live in Pennsylvania. I love the fact that people think they have a red wolf, that they've taken the time and they've learned about it. Sometimes do you get many
I get a
much?
lot, and then I'm like, "Go to the Red Wolf helpline because I can't tell you anything. I don't know. I am not the person."
And
Free photo.
it's I some people are really willing to say, this is where I live. Others don't. They want an answer first. And so sometimes it's obvious, sometimes it's not. I just tell people, there's 11 that have an orange tracking collar. There could be others, but are they in Michigan? They're far travelers, but that's a long way to go. But again, I always go back to, that's really cool that somebody wants to. I had somebody 2 weeks ago, he was determined that was a red wolf. And I said, it doesn't matter what I think, genetic testing is the only way that you can tell anything. And so I sometimes think a little bit of that uncertainty is hard to explain away. You know, science is just that, science, and it changes, you know, sometimes from week to week and month to month and year to year. But just to say, hey, you know, he was willing to get genetic material, and I finally was like, okay, thank you. I can't do any more for you.
Here's
It's
the Red Wolf hotline.
yeah. I mean, he did not live in North Carolina. He did not live in North Carolina at all. So I did forward the pictures on to the responsible people and got an answer. So don't he didn't like that either, but that's okay. Again, it's raising that awareness. So when you work with kids, not necessarily like elementary, but maybe fifth to middle grade or even high school, do you find that they are very open to learning about wolves, about red wolves?
It's I always love talking to school kids. I don't like teaching on like a formal level in a school setting, like where I'm like the teacher. I like coming in and talking to them. But I love being able to teach school kids because they have so much natural curiosity that no matter what they're told growing up about predators or snakes or anything, they still like are leaning in to kind of figure out like, oh, what is this about? And so being able to have that natural curiosity really does help open that floor. And I've had some kids that they repeat what their parents have told them about wolves, and then we have a bit of a conversation. But other than that, I mean, it's just so great seeing their curiosity. I find that they're very well receptive with, you know, the sprinkle of, well, my parents said this is what red wolves do. And then it's like, okay, well, in our experiences, like, have we ever experienced? And, you know, trying to have those like smaller conversations that aren't leading into these really, really big out of the world
I
conversations.
know. I always find it a bit of a sticky wicket when I can remember the first time I went into a classroom locally, and a boy in the back of the class sat with his arms folded, and he did no reaction. And then, you know, pelts and skulls are all in the front of the tables, and I'm like, after the presentation, I'm done. You know, come up, let's ask questions. He never budged, and he told me that his grandfather said he was not to engage at all, that we did not. He said, we do not like red wolves. So you don't have a conversation. You don't. And that's what that little boy did. And I, you know, okay. It's
I mean,
sometimes it's hard, but I do think we're all doing the right thing by just like you said, just let's just have a conversation. Let's just talk about them. What do you want to know? You know, they're really good family members. And how do they talk? They don't have voices, but these are all the different ways that they can communicate with each other. And imagine, like, the number one question I get with kids when I have pelts and skulls with the pelts is, how did they die? Were they real? Yes and yes. But just the communication and then the tracking collars, like, how would you like to wear one of those for mom and dad to keep up with you? You know, kids are
Oh my
every
gosh.
You know, kids now have a cell phone. You know, a tracking collar is so heavy compared to a, but I'm like you. I like when you can educate kids, but let them come to their own conclusions. Like, oh, that's really cool. Instead of shoving it down their throat that, you know, this is what you need to like, and this is important because I said it was important, not because there is some value in it, and but figure, you know, kind of have to figure that out yourself.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Sorry, this might be diverging a bit, and you just
Oh,
reminded me, but have you ever experienced when you're asked why are red wolves important?
no. Oh, yeah.
I have such a hard time with that question. Even when kids ask me that, I'm like, well, it depends. I value things differently, and
Yes.
it truly is that I can value red wolves for just being a species,
And
but
that,
to other people, that where they put their importances of life is going to be so different. I always struggle answering that question.
Yes, because I'm like you. I can have a very simple answer. Well, why do you like red wolves? Well, why wouldn't I? Why shouldn't they be here? Well, why shouldn't they? They were here one time. Like I'm like you. I don't need to give you a dissertation. I can pretty much sum it up in just a couple a couple statements. So no, I always know when I'm doing an interview with somebody that that's going to come up. And I try to do some pre-thinking as I'm talking, and inevitably I just go, well, why not? Why shouldn't they? What and or what do you love about them?
Oh my
And that's
gosh,
easy for me. It's
right.
the how. The how resonates a lot with me. And I think that goes back to doing the howlings when I used to stand in the dark and try to get them to howl. And then they howl. And I used to think that voice could have been silenced forever. And to me, that's an emotional thought as much as it is when I do a program and I tell people, do you know that we have the only red wolves in the wild in the world? Like that's like, what do you think about that? Like, that's how often do you get to say that? I mean, that's pretty cool. I don't know if you find that same reaction from people when you tell them, this is it, guys.
Like, this is the place. Oh, yeah. People are just like, they only in the entire, I'm like, in the entire world, there's only this many in the wild. That's it.
I mean, and that to me adds why it just adds to their importance. And I'm not sure what, how the Federation feels. I don't get all wrapped around the axles about other places where they should be recovered, or where should that be? When should it be? I mean, I feel like we got to get everything right here. And certainly the service has those tools. It's not always as easy. I don't know if you feel that way. I think some people just think, it's just a government agency. What do they know? But these are experienced individuals that throw everything at any and every problem they can and feel that emotion when an animal dies, or a fostering. Well, fostering has worked, but when these releases, they've worked really hard to get them together, and then they open the gate and one goes one way and one goes the other. And so it's hard. And those, I think, to me, I don't know if you feel this way, tell me if you do, sometimes those are the hardest conversations to have.
I mean, I watch multiple agencies, not even just Fish and Wildlife Service, but also nonprofits like Red Wolf Coalition and NCWF try to do everything we can, because it really is a community effort in trying to help red wolves. It's so heartbreaking. My heart breaks for the Fish and Wildlife Service field staff. My heart breaks for the nonprofits. My heart breaks for the red wolves, for the safe facilities. And now I'm getting all emotional
Yeah, no,
thinking
I
about
mean, that's what keeps us doing this. I mean,
it. Absolutely,
you've just been in it a shorter amount of time than me, and I'm always honest to say there were some times in there I wanted to lay the keys on the desk and say, this is for somebody else. I mean, this is hard. It was hard from the perspective to watch what was happening to the animals. It was hard, and this is when it gets personal, when things are happening to you because of something that you support so strongly, and it still does how you're treated in the community, what they think of you. And sometimes I wonder if it's different in this community, because Kat and I live in this, we live in Colombia, we both live here. I've often wondered, we're not going to like go into, Dr. Laura or anything like that, get a psychologist on. Maybe we need one. I don't know, Kat.
That's it. Yep,
Maybe we don't.
psychologist time.
Is because, like, how they treat Kat, is it different than how they treat me? Because I was here during a horrible time from that 2012 period when it just seems like everything imploded and everybody looked at you and, gosh, they'd stop me everywhere and ran me off the road, and they'd get me in the grocery store, and it's like, oh my gosh, just leave me alone for 5 minutes. I've often wondered, but who knows? I guess I've gotten way off topic.
Well, no, I definitely get stopped in the grocery store, but I don't know if it's because I just like genuinely go, oh my gosh, yeah, let's have a conversation. And maybe it makes people take a step back of like, you are
Yeah,
Between
it's
fun
hard.
and
It's
vanity. Mm-hmm.
yeah, I mean it's 'cause I find people want to talk about red wolves. They have questions or and
Oh,
sometimes those have been some of my best moments. Like me walking out of the office and somebody walking up to the pharmacy, which is next door to our office, and there was a local who had a conversation. She had a little dog, and she was worried about the dog going out at night. So we talked about some things to do, not just for wolves, but for coyotes too. We live amongst coyotes here, bears, just any wildlife. You know, I told her what I do when I take my dog out and make noise, and so you know, we certainly have found, and that could be a conversation for another day, how red wolves and coyotes, you know, the story of the red wolf without the coyote, certainly the coyote is part of that story, and there's so many cool things that are going on in the Texas, Louisiana area right now. It's kind of exciting. I don't know if you feel that way.
I do. It feels like watching science unfold before me. It's really, really neat.
I know, and those people down there doing that work are just so incredibly cool. They just had a meeting last week. There's some development in the Galveston Island area that looks like wants to occur, and I would say the best of the genetic scientists went down for a public meeting and had a conversation. And I think, as best I can tell, I think everybody, cool heads did prevail. And hopefully conversations will continue. Like, yes, there can be some growth, but we need to make room for these animals. But what does making room look like? I mean, I think we have that here too. There's been a lot of conversations about red wolf mortalities due to vehicle strikes. And anybody that's traveled on Highway 64 knows that it can be a racetrack on a Saturday morning up until mid-afternoon, and there are big signs, big road signs telling people that there's red wolves and to drive carefully. I don't know if you've had this cat. This happened to me twice. It just happened this weekend. Headed over to the Outer Banks. So head down 64, go over the Alligator River Bridge, and you're right into Dare County. And there's the first sign. And I had people just slow down. And it's
Oh
like,
my
I
gosh.
want you to slow down, but not this slow. Like, there has to be a happy medium somewhere. They're just the signs are there to make you aware. Don't do 80 miles an hour. Like, the speed limit is 55.
Or
It's
like maybe even have them slow down at night. I can't begin to tell you the amount of times I was driving home from the refuge at night. And people are still flying by me. I'm going
I
like 50,
know. I
and
know.
I'm just like, I'm trying not to hit a bear
You
because,
and me both.
oh my gosh, I think I'm more scared about that right now is hitting a bear.
Yes.
How big.
Although I always worried after the howlings, like, oh my gosh, if I hit a wolf, like if I hit a wolf, like it's bad enough. But I think if I do it, like, oh my gosh, like I don't even know what would I do if I hit one. I don't even know. I just can't think about it. I worry more about the bears.
Yeah, I hit one bear in my time out here and I
Have
cried
you?
for 2 days.
Oh yeah, that's
My car
hard.
was fine because I was going 45 looking for it and it just
Yep.
appeared. I cried. So I can't imagine what I would do if a red wolf pops in front of my car.
Yeah, I go slow at night. I'm the old lady on the road, not to the point that I'm causing an accident or anything like that. But I try to get behind a truck, like a tractor trailer. Then I figure I'm okay. But then they're the ones doing 80 miles an hour. So anyway, I guess we've gotten away from education and outreach. So for those people that think they might want to get in, that might want to help the red wolf, but really don't know where to begin, that's a question I get a lot. So we'll kind of break it up into age groups. We'll just say like the elementary school, K through five. What would you tell kids in that age group that what could they do to help with red wolves?
I mean, for all like encompassing, I just encourage all great age groups to just learn about red wolves.
Yep.
Talk to your friends about it.
Yep.
It's like, oh, hey, I learned something cool. Did you know that there's a species of wolf called a red wolf? Like at any level of that, because so much I find that not enough of the world even knows that red wolves exist, whether they're in our state or on the opposite end of the world itself. So many people just don't know their existence, and just saying, hey, I heard about this animal, You know, whether it's kids sharing it amongst each other or sharing it with their family members, just talking about them and going, oh, I learned about a red wolf today. Or, hey, I looked up this kid's book, or I want to read this kid's book. You know, in the last 2 years, I cannot believe the amount of children's books that have come out on the red wolf
I
and
know,
are
it's
still
cool.
coming, which is so amazing. And so there's so many more opportunities for sharing it. So trying to encourage your kids to read those children's books, or even just encouraging them to share what they've learned. I mean, even if it's not about red wolves, having them share what they've learned is fantastic in general, because it means that they're internalizing that information.
Exactly. And they want to learn.
Exactly. And so, yeah, just a general, it may seem like not enough. I always tell people who are interested in helping red wolves and like just talk about them, and they always seem a little bit crestfallen at the idea, but the reality is that the more people are aware of red wolves, the more that can happen. And
Exactly.
so, I mean, it's such a big undertaking. That's why to have people that are willing to talk about them is so important for the future of red wolves.
And to reach out for those people, like if you have a club that you belong to and you love red wolves and you raise your hand and say, hey, I know somebody that can come talk about them. There, the cat will be happy to come out. I'll be happy to come out. We crisscross and travel and go places and talk about it. I encourage people. There are about 50 safe facilities, zoos and nature centers. There are 266 animals in that community. If there's one near you, contact them and see what they can do. Tell them you're interested in red wolves. And depending on your age and what their requirements are, maybe you can go and be an educator for them or hand out pamphlets or, go and learn and do something. I think that's always, and then websites, I always caution people on websites. There's lots of websites out there, lots of social media about a lot of different things, and it's not always accurate. But yeah, it's I to your point exactly. Talk about them, pass a book along. If it's a book you've read, give it to a friend and say, hey, this was really cool. But there have been a lot. There was just one recently, which I should have had it on my desk to think about, but I will put it in the comments.
Lemon, it's lemon and something.
I thought I have it way across the room, but I'm not going to get up and make all that noise to do that. So, but yeah, it was a good book. Our board chair worked with editing, and it's funny, I have a hard time working with writers because I'm like, yeah, but a wolf would never do that. And so I always pass that along. I'm not the person to edit your work of fiction because I'll be saying, no, wolves would never do that,
Yeah, right. So the book is Lemon and Cedar,
There you
story
go.
by Christelle Dyer. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. And illustrations by Eric Freeberg.
And I think it's on, it's at Barnes and Noble, and it's also on Amazon. So again, I'll put that link on the description, of this podcast. I always put a little description about what we talked about and any links, and I'll put, the information. So we're kind of getting close to the hour. So what else do you want the world to know about what you do, Kat? I really put you on the spot now.
Ooh.
So, okay, tell them about the hours. What are the winter hours at the center?
Right. So the winter hours of the Red Wolf Center are Thursday through Saturday. I have programs on Thursday and Friday at 10 a.m., 1 p.m., and 3 p.m. And when I say programs, it means having a formal Red Wolf talk, talking about the history, the biology, and the management of red wolves, and then the opportunity to try to see one of the exhibit wolves, which at this point, Kim, I know it's a really different kind of behavior than what is being perceived, but they hide 99% of the time when
Yeah,
I'm in trouble.
I believe it. It's
Cool.
different. And Kat says that because as the caretaker, I have to go in, I have to feed and clean up and do that. And we have one wolf that I swear, if I had a backpack, we'd get in the backpack. He's funny. And so, again, in learning about wolves, to me, I think there's some connection with food and that's what I do. If I never fed them, would he do that? The other one doesn't. He's usually in the den box. So it's interesting. And to me, that's interesting right there. Here, when people come, they hide, but when I go in, he's play bowing. I mean, he's sometimes I hear him, he's so close. And it's funny, I'll tell a funny story. Last week we had a little bit of rain. There's some leaves down, a little bit of mud, and I was actually cleaning the water bin thing, which or whatever it's called, that holds the water, and I could hear him like the play bow. And so it's for anybody that has a dog that play bows, they sort of run to you and play, but you can hear them when those front paws hit the ground. Well, when they did, it was wet and the leaves, and he began to slide toward me, and like his eyes were giant. I just took a step to my left and went toward the gate because I knew I was fine. I just wasn't so sure he was okay. He was fine. He was not hurt. It was just the notion is, oh my gosh, I'm sliding toward her and I can't. He just couldn't get a grip because the ground was wet and the
Oh
leaves were wet.
my God. I love
It
that.
was funny. It was a funny story.
Oh, absolutely.
Give people the phone number to call if they want to call and check and make sure you're open or talk about bringing a big group.
So they can reach me at my work cell phone. I'm not always in the Red Wolf Center, so I always hesitate to give the Red Wolf Center's number, but my work phone number is 252-216 6634. And they're welcome to call me. Just maybe don't call me on a Sunday. It's like one of the few days I don't work.
That's the day they'll
I
call.
know. And then I didn't mention Saturday, but Saturday my programs were only at 10 a.m. and 1 p.m. So just those 3 days a week during the winter. During the summer, those hours will change and hopefully expand again like they did last year. And I'm really excited. And I guess I thought about it, Kim, and I'm trying to think. So the last thing that I think I would love for people to take away about what I do is that I am very, very passionate about this program, and there is never a question to ask me that is silly or dumb or anything like that. It is, I consider it all valid because if you simply don't know, why not try to get the information? So I like to say that I am completely open for all aspects. This is my favorite thing to do. I get to live probably the greatest dream I've ever had, which was to make a living out of talking about wildlife instead of my parents telling me, please stop talking about hyenas.
That's funny.
My family is very sick and tired of my random animal facts. I'm like, oh, did you know? And they're like, no. You're done. So please, please, please feel free to reach out. This is literally my favorite, most favorite thing to do. And I never want someone to feel like they can't ask the questions that are burning at the back of their mind about red wolves. So
And I appreciate
I
that.
need you.
Certainly, your family, my daughter, my license plate has a vanity plate, but it had nothing to do with Red Wolves. It was life before. I would pull up to get gas and somebody'd say, oh, are you an NC State fan? Well, I couldn't just say no. Then I had to start. And she'd be like, Mom, please. Not everybody wants to know. But I
Love
figure,
that.
hey, if they're going to ask, they're going to find out. So.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Kat. This has been fun. I hope everybody enjoys the conversation. We certainly got a little off track on education, but I think it's a great way to talk about red wolves and share our experiences. I get a lot of people ask me like, "How do I get to do what you do?" And I think, "Oh, it's not that glamorous. Like it really isn't." There's a lot of high highs and a lot of low lows. And so I think this conversation, thank you very much, Kat. I think maybe people got a good sense of what it is that each of us do and how it relates to the Red Wolf. And I hope everybody will stay tuned. I'm not sure what the next podcast will do. I haven't done one yet of just questions. I think I may hold off on that a little bit, but probably we'll do something like that in the next month or so. Hoping I have a really good somebody who's going to join me next week, just not sure their schedule. So you might just hear me blabbering on next week, but I hope you guys will continue to listen, continue to be interested in Red Wolves and keep howling. And we will talk to you soon. And thank you very much, Kat.
Thank you, Kim.